This is the MagicWordPodcast.com.
We just finished with the morning session, which was phenomenal, and we'll get into talking about that as the day progresses. But I'm in the dealer's room right now because I'll soon be closing the dealer's room, so last chance to grab your stuff. And one of the people who's strolling around right now, I see an old friend, is Jeff McBride. Hey, Jeff, how are you?
Good to see you. I was over visiting Gabe over at Potter & Potter, and
yep.
Nick DeFott has a new book out there.
Got it right here.
Yes.
I've got the last copy.
I always come here to get the book releases.
Yep.
To expand our library. That's really important, is our library at the Magic School.
For the Magic School. How many books are in the library over there now?
Countless books. There are rooms full of books. No one's. I mean, we've had
over
it organized. It's all in order. Alphabetical by author, Conjuring, and then we have a separate section for all mentalism. But, I mean, there's at least 5,000 books in four rooms.
What about lecture notes? Do you keep lecture notes?
As a matter of fact, I do keep a lot of lecture notes. I keep a lot of paper. And I was talking to Mark D'Souza about lecture notes. And the reason lecture notes are important is because many magicians that were performers or contributors to our magic community, they never wrote a book or put out a DVD, but many of them put out lecture notes. And that means that these people that wrote up these lecture notes actually performed this material. Unlike many books that are filled with material that is not road tested.
Mm-hmm.
And here is a person out on the road lecturing four magicians and wanting to fool them and seduce them enough into buying the notes. And I learned that from Mark D'Souza about the importance of lecture notes. And that's one of the most overlooked areas of magical training.
Yeah, one part of my library also, I have one bookcase that's full of lecture notes. The hard thing is, because they're so thin or they're spiral bound or paper or stapled or whatever, of trying to index them. How do you go about it?
Well, I learned from Bill Goodwin at the Magic Castle that the best way is to put them in cardboard in archival sleeves and then put them in a magazine file.
Okay,
and
so you pull each one of those little files out.
You pull each one, and you label on the
ends.
You turn them around so you have that. I learned that from Ray Goulet when I went to visit Ray Goulet in his collection in his library, which part of his collection resides at the Mystery School, his gimmick collection. But I studied his library, and he's got the magazine cases, you know, that you put the magazines in.
Yes, right.
But on the spine of it, you list all of the notes
that are in that particular...
So you're not constantly going from H file to H file to... or a lot of M's. There are a lot of M's. So you list on the spine what notes are inside, and it makes it almost instantaneous.
Do you list it by author or subject or...
Well, most... I learned this from Jamie Ian Swiss. Alphabetical by author. However, I do have special sections for illusion books that are specifically illusion. Books that are specifically only manipulation.
Okay.
Books that are specifically only street magic. And then I have a whole mentalism section. And then I have, you know, variety arts, mime and mask and theater. So those will go in specialty sections.
Right. And that's how you actually will divide your library, not just the lecture notes you're saying.
Right.
Well.
The entire library. And this makes it accessible to our students that come to our school, that they can access the information instantly.
You have a label, or rather some sort of digital way that they can look at it so they can go to it?
Or they just wander around? No. We have a librarian that directs them to the books they need.
A librarian?
Yes.
You have a person who actually is like at the Magic Castle, kind of a librarian?
When we have classes, we have a librarian, yeah.
Yeah, and that's their specific responsibility.
We have a full-time librarian.
So tell me about Magic Live. How have you been enjoying this? You've been kind of in and out, I guess.
I've been doing some private events, so it's taken me away, and I'm usually always working, but I couldn't because I've been I usually work doing lectures or teaching or some sort of production for Magic Live every year.
I know.
And this is the first year I've gotten to just kind of experience some. Yeah.
How has that felt?
I haven't been here much because I have other shows. Yeah, so I've been in just very briefly.
Are you going to be traveling much in the future?
Well,
soon,
yeah.
Or what's your, now we're getting out of COVID.
Mystery School has its own room at FISM this year. So we'll be at the World Championships in Quebec. And like we used to do at the World Magic Seminar, we have our own room with a stage and close-up tables. And we're going to be the official sessioning area. And we're going to get all of our friends and faculty from all over the world together to teach free workshops there on close-up magic and mentalism and parlor magic and manipulation.
It'll be an actual scheduled time. So, I mean, like with saying, okay, we're going to be talking about cards and we'll have Eric Mead talk or whatever, something like a certain time, kind of like they do here with the focus session.
That's right. We do 3 hours in the afternoon. And then after the gala show closes at night, people will come into our room for lectures and sessioning.
Is this actually part of FISM?
Yes. No,
we were
engaged.
That is awesome.
Well, they wanted to bring Wonderground up, but that's too much of a production. So we said, let's bring Mystery School up there because it'll be much more effective.
How nice. Well, yeah, since we're in North America for the first time, that they're actually taking advantage of things like you and that are in North America.
That's right.
It'll be easier to transport things up there.
So traveling's coming back, shows are coming back, corporate shows, casino shows are coming back. So I have been doing some traveling. Yes.
Kind of like nothing ever happened. I mean,
no, something happened.
Well, you have something to kind of talk about the elephant in the room, I guess.
That's right.
Jeff, thanks very much. You've done so much for Magic, and it's totally great.
And you're so consistent, Scott. You really are.
Thank you.
You're committed to this, and I really applaud you for all your contributions to our Magic community.
Thanks a lot. For the Magic Word Podcast, that was Jeff McBride. Scotty out. Well, here we are on the final day, day four, I guess it is, of the 20-day convention. Final day. Here with Michael Mode. Hey, Michael, how are you?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing great.
It's one of those things in which seems like we were just talking about that, you know, there's so many people here, you don't see them. I mean, you've been here since day one, so have I, but, you know, like, you got a green lane, you're like, got a yellow, so different people, not seeing the same
There's
ones,
so many people, and there's so many things going on, but I'm glad we met up.
Yep, and so tell me, what has been one of the highlights for you so far?
Well, two words, Aussie wind.
Yeah.
Wow.
Wow. Yeah,
I'm sure someone else has mentioned it, but the close-up last night just blew me away.
Yeah.
He was always great, but he's gotten even better. And he's gotten funny, really funny.
Yes.
Yeah.
And it has a natural wit. Doesn't seem like that it's contrived or pushed, you know.
Yep, yep. I mean, he just, the whole thing with the deck, I don't want to give any spoilers away.
No, it's fine.
But
I mean,
go see him when he does the show. It's incredible. It's like nothing you've seen before.
Yeah, well, you talked about this.
The close-up show was good, too. And
Pit Hartling and Shutagawa.
Pit Hartling and Shutagawa, incredible.
Yeah.
They were all incredible, and then Aussie Wynn was just...
What I really liked particularly about Aussie was it was a card trick, but using blank cards were people coming in, and so people were signing. And I thought, what a brilliant idea for using something that are personal cards that people... And so you can call out names and things, which... And his feign, which, it's not working. And then, you know, it just... At the end, it's amazing.
He sold it so well, didn't he?
Yeah, I thought, okay, well, I got to have to quit. I'm sorry for people.
You know, there's some magicians that make you want to go home and practice. He makes you want to go home and quit. You know, it's that good.
Yeah,
And the thing with the names on the decks, blank cards, and he has everyone write their name. Makes a deck out of everyone in the audience, and it makes it so much more personal.
Right. Well, you're Greenland, so this afternoon in the general session, you will hear him talking about when he was on Penn & Teller Fool Us about this particular trick he devised that was a big mechanical thing he dreamt about and is only used a few times and used it there to fool Penn & Teller, which was great.
Right.
And different levels of fooling also.
So
you'll look forward to that.
Yeah, that's in about an hour, so I'm looking forward to that.
So this morning you had focus session. So but before we get to that, what about last evening's show, aside from the close-up? Anything else that you saw or did?
It was great to have Milt Larson here. You know, that was just so nice and touching. And Randy Pitchford saving the Magic Castle and ensuring that it's going to live on, you know, forever. It's great.
Yeah.
Just great.
Yeah. Last evening I saw the Discovery of Magic or something.
Yeah.
Did you see that show?
With
Rob Zabrecki and Stewart.
Ago. Okay. Yeah, very interesting. Very avant-garde and wonderful. I loved it.
Yes.
Mentalism and just very unique. I mean, those are the things you only see here at Magic Live.
Well, and like the Museum of the Arcane that we saw also with all these robot or automatons.
Yeah, I love automatons. I love old coin-op stuff. I collect old vintage coin-op. So that was right up my alley. Yeah. It was really neat.
And that's what I enjoyed about the general session yesterday. There was another fellow who did robotics and has a show that he interacts with robots, which was amazing. I'd
brilliant.
Not seen the
another
guy before.
Brilliant thing. Yeah, I had never heard of him, and that's another great thing about Magic Live. You come here, and there's always some surprises that you've never seen before, and you leave and you go, wow, that was wonderful. I'm glad that Stan and the team brought him here.
Yeah.
With the robot killing him at the end in his show. I mean,
and then just great. Ending the show.
Yeah. Yeah, it got dark really quick, but it was wonderful. I mean, a family audience, but it's great.
Yeah, it's kind of like there is the end of the world. And,
What was your favorite?
Well, no one's asked me that. I hadn't thought about that, but I did like the close-up and everything and the arcane. I'm a big Rob Zabrecki fan, I guess, and perhaps that may have been a highlight for me because anything he does is just offbeat. And the fact he had done it with Stewart, who he was apparently, you know, with Barry and Stewart, and I guess they're no longer together. Yeah. And so that was a surprise to me, number one, they weren't together, and number two, it's like, that looks like the same guy who was with, and then he mentioned during the show later. You know, so that was cool.
It was good. And, you're right, Zabrecki, he's just an artist, right?
Yeah.
He comes on stage, and he's got a presence, and he's just got the voice. And you know you're seeing something unique.
So let me tell you, actually, I just happened to think that actually what was a highlight was hearing, and you'll hear this again today, when you go to the session, is Derek Delgadio talking about In and of Itself and the production of that show and then going to Hulu and the making of it. It was amazing.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that, too.
Yep. So what about the focus sessions? Who did you see this morning?
Christopher Carter and Shuto Gawa. Okay. Both very good. You know, Christopher Carter, I remember seeing him back in the early 90s and doing hypnosis and mentalism. He's great.
He's a great thinker.
You know, three routines that are very practical, very doable, and you can work out of your pockets.
Yeah.
Carol Fox would be proud.
Well, he's done a lot of things that people may not know or hear about. I mean, he was the one who invented, I believe, the anniversary waltz card trick, as well as several other things, and I think of him as being a mentalist, but he's more than that, certainly. So I'm looking forward to that. I see that's happening, too.
Yeah. Great. It was great to see him.
Well, good. Michael, I look forward to seeing you then in Abbott's. We'll be seeing it at Abbott's get-together.
That's my favorite week of the year. Magic Live's a close second.
Yeah.
And I love your podcast, man. I listen to it every morning on the way to work.
Thank you.
And it's great. You know, you bring this conversation to the magic community. You're doing a big service, and I appreciate it.
Well, thank you very much. It means a lot. It kind of helps keep me go. I mean, I'm always looking for people who are going to be donors and friends of the Magic Word who can make a financial pledge, but not everybody can. But there are comments like this really.
Yeah.
The money's great, which helps to defray my cost,
but
I still like doing this because I like talking to friends. I mean, it's something that helps me, and I learn a lot. And boy, do I learn a lot, you know, talking to so many people. You know?
Yeah, and it's wonderful, and I'm going to give you some money so you can buy some donuts.
Yeah. Thank you.
You're going to be at the airport tomorrow.
Yeah, so. That's right, I will be tomorrow. In fact, a guy had given me a donation of a Dunkin' Donuts card, a gift card, had some money on it. So it's like, I can use that. Thank you.
It's
you're
like
a friend.
Donation.
A donation. I like that. Yeah, so I accept those too. Michael, good seeing you. I'm looking forward
Scott,
to having some chicken dinner with you with the Amish when we get up to Colin.
I can't wait. First week in August.
That's right, for the Magic Word Podcast, that was Michael Mode, Scotty L. We are into day four, and we have not yet had the opportunity to talk with the organizer because he's been so busy, and I didn't want to interrupt him as he was walking at his normal swift pace up and down the floor. So here he is, Stan Al. Hey there, Chief.
Hey, Scott.
So glad that we are finally getting a chance to sit down and chat just a little bit about this. The preparation, again, has taken 3 years to get to where we are today, huh?
It does seem that way, and I'm very glad just to be sitting down. No offense, but with anybody, I'll be happy to sit down. Yeah. No, this convention has been designed 2, 3, 4 times.
Yeah.
Once for social distancing, once for limited capacity. I mean, just everything that could be thrown.
Yeah.
And
even having to change the dates from August to May.
We did. Well, we canceled it twice.
Yeah.
You know, that was a fun story. We canceled it the first time. And we got a lot of pushback on social media. What are you doing?
Back in 2020, what do you mean canceling it?
I know. It was in mid-March or something, late March.
Yeah.
And everybody pushed back. And then the very next day, the Olympics postponed. And we never heard another word.
Well, that's funny. Okay. So you kind of led the way, I guess.
Yeah, I didn't even know they followed us. You know, those guys.
You see, what's Stan doing? Oh, yeah, no, we need to cancel, too.
He's got
to
cancel.
Well, one big question people have asked me is why May instead of August?
Oh, We had intended to.
And you've always been Mr. August to the Orleans.
Well, yes, they used to call me that now. Now they have other names for me, which we probably shouldn't go into here. Because then you'd actually have to listen to this and edit things out. And we know you don't like to do that.
That's right. That's too much work.
Too much work. From the onset, we were planning on skipping a year for FISM. And we had other plans for that year. Mm-hmm. And so we had planned for that, built up reserves for that. We were ready to take a year off. And then we did take a year off. It was for the pandemic, though. Mm-hmm. And so suddenly we were going to do a convention in a FISM year. And so we just opted to go into the spring. And since we hadn't done one in so long, it was nice to be able to do it 3 or 4 months earlier than usual. Mm-hmm. And, but we're not... We'll be returning to August.
Okay. That was going to be my next leading question, because some people were saying May is nice because it's not as hot. I mean, out in Las Vegas, certainly May has been beautiful weather.
101 out there. Yeah, I haven't seen sunlight in 5 days or 6 days.
It was a full moon out last night. I went out at midnight to a party, and man, it's a beautiful moon. It was nice. It wasn't crisp, but it was cool. Nice breeze. Well, desert breeze.
Yeah. So it's not. Somebody, as soon as we said May, somebody put out on the thing, Magic Live, even cooler. I like that. That's good.
But, well, our Magic Live may happen.
Well, there is that too. Sure.
But the fact, some people are saying, well, this is bad timing because it's graduation weekend. Different high schools and colleges graduate their seniors at different times, and so this was a weekend that was difficult for some.
Sure, there's no question. But I also have run into a few people that have said, hey, we could come to this one. We do summer shows. We work at this amusement park, or we have our own theater, and we're there all summer. That's our selling season, so we can't come to this. So,
there's a little bit of both sides.
Yeah, that's always right.
So you just answered the question. We are going to be having it then in August of next year, of 23. Huh?
That's the plan.
Okay. Well, it may happen in August.
True. It's just on the last day of one convention is probably the worst time to ask a promoter if they're going to do it again. Yes.
I'm sure that your family is saying, Dad, are we gonna? I hear Katie again. So with that, obviously Orleans is always a place that we have it, and got a good working relationship, a great theater that's there. I remember last time we were here, they were talking about opening these rooms, which they have now, so we have an expanded space for some of these rooms, and this... it was very nice, and also the variety that you had. There were so many people here I have never seen or heard of before that you brought in. How do you find these people?
Oh, well, I mean, I stay in touch with a lot of people, and these people are always recommending somebody. Mm-hmm. And so, and also often it's people that we've been trying to get for a few years. We have two or three people here that I've probably been talking to for 5 or 6 years. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't work out right on any particular year or whatever. Or sometimes we have them booked and then they have to cancel.
Right. But some of the people, like Yuki from Japan, who was a FISM winner, and the explanation of the things that he was talking about, how that he would create, and then he has to solve certain problems. And another robotics guy, and Kuntz, the artist, and having him as the Museum of the Arcane. All these things have just come together, I mean, beautifully, which has to do with creativity. That's the hallmark of this year. Each year you have some sort of a one-word way of explaining it.
Yeah, this word is survival. obviously it's a challenging time to always, this year we didn't really put a theme per se on it. It was all about celebrating. Mm-hmm. Celebration.
That was the word, celebration.
Basically. Celebration.
Because we're so glad to get back together again.
Exactly. And it doesn't matter what you're celebrating. Mm. We're celebrating the art of celebrating, really, here. I know it sounds a little crazy. It just worked out like yesterday's general session was very heavy on creativity. Mm-hmm. And creativity is always going to be an underlying current for Magic Live, just because that's what's fun. That's why we come together to see what's new. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We want to see that new thing. We want to see Yuki do those card manipulations that we don't know how that actually works, even though he's explaining to us how that works.
Right. As far as the creativity, it was interesting. I thought on the documentary, which was
interesting title, because so many people, including myself, were thinking, is this just going to be a documentary of some sort of past magic lives we've had, and some people are going to come and from the past, and we're going to maybe see some films or whatever. But the fact it was documenting some of the people and the journeys that they have taken to get where they are, because we tried this and then to try something else, but to get to where you are is not easy. It's a long and arduous journey to success, and that was proven by showing those great videos of all the performers.
Yeah, I mean, the idea was to take well-known magicians and show them doing things before they became well-known, mm-hmm. both on screen and live on stage. And I know some people misunderstand that title, but the real title of the show is Flashback. And so it's the idea of saying, here is Paul Gertner doing a stage act before most people knew Paul Dirt.
With feathers and fire.
Exactly. And Mike Caveney did a thimble act. And
Mark Kalin was a pool shark. I mean, my gosh, that was a great act.
Yeah, it was.
Yeah.
Yeah, Mark was a standout. And Tina Leonard did, you know, the mechanical doll things before doing Mop Man. Mm-hmm. Matt King as the Viking that we've all heard about, and yet we've somehow talked Mac into putting a Viking helmet on again.
That was funny.
Drop into his character.
It's too bad that Jeff couldn't make it.
It was too bad. Jeff Hobson, because Hobson, we all know, is a very funny guy, and yet he was a manipulation act, mm-hmm. you know, early on. So we got to still show a clip of him. But so that was the idea of the show. And as typical on live, I think that show was suggested to me by Kalin, actually, five or six years ago, maybe, mm-hmm. or something. And we make notes about stuff like that. And we try to develop it a little ways. We kind of say, what if we did this? Well, that's a bad idea. Okay, so let's just spend 15 minutes on the bad idea. And now we'll put a set of timer and start playing a little bit and see where we go in the 15 minutes. And if it goes far enough, we'll grab another day and do another 15, 20 minutes on it or whatever and just keep dreaming it. And but that happens a lot. And we don't throw any of that stuff away. So now it comes, this seemed like a good year to do it.
A good year to do it, yeah.
And we managed to talk these guys and girls into doing it for us.
And I thought it was nice also today with Carissa as Lucy Darling kind of wrapping things up in her comical way and having some callbacks to everything that happened, and it was a nice way of closing out the sessions, the general sessions.
Yeah. Carissa has been on our team for the last four or five conventions, and she's the most organized person in the world, maybe. And she works with Rick Gerber, who directs our general sessions, and he's, you know, the man in charge. And she runs everything backstage, and I mean runs it, and it all goes smoothly. Mm-hmm. And we thought, no, we want to get you on stage. So we got her on stage as Carissa Hendricks for the entire thing. And then at the end, she does come out as Lucy Darling to sort of make fun of us little bit. And we thought it was a fun way to end our general sessions. And
A couple of last questions. And did you have something this year you would like to have done but maybe didn't come together, or because of COVID or whatever other reasons or travel restrictions from some other countries you couldn't get, and it's like, well, I might reserve this for next year, keep that on the back burner?
We have a number of things like that. We had two or three heavily themed concepts. But in a couple of those cases, it required manufacturing of something that, because of international shipping and because of supply chain
problems.
And I mean, these are just some of the things. The notebook that you're holding, the paper was bought 3 months ago before any ink went on a page. The paper was bought. We had to pick the weight and decide and sacrifice, change the size a little because it couldn't get the paper we needed. And we didn't even know what it was going to look like yet, but we had to make decisions on paper, and we had to block out time at press back in the Midwest for the color program you'll get tonight. So things like that. So you start saying, what can we produce in the United States? Which I like to produce things in the United States, of course. And other things, you know, couldn't be produced in the United States, and the supply chain stopped us. So a lot of what we did this year was dictated by logistics. And that's, you know, it's not always the most creative way, but I don't know. I just have a feeling this year that all of you came here wanting to be together, wanting to have a really good time. And I sort of think our job is not to get in the way of that
Wow, well put. That, in a very small nutshell, really summarizes everything. You're exactly right. We are anxious to get together, and like, yeah, we're just going to have little things over here, but we'll kind of stay out of your way so you can enjoy each other. And there does seem to be enough time for us to do that. I mean, even the bicycle card room that we've got over there is expanded from what we've had. You've got a lot more
room. Once we went from 1,000 square feet to, I think, 2,500 square feet or something, and I thought, I will never fill it. And I walked by the other night. Chocolate. A lot of people in there at all hours. And, you know, this is a group of people that you could throw them all into on an island with no official events, and they would take care of themselves and entertain themselves and everything. And that's all part of the gathering, the kind of camaraderie that is in the magic world that you don't find in other art forms, not in juggling or in comedy or other things that... And I attribute that a little bit to the idea that we hide our skills.
That's the nature of our art, which we really...
So, you might be a great... I mean, I always use this example, this is embarrassing, but here's Derek Delgadio, who's here. Well, you know, I can't think of a better set of hands anywhere in the world. Right. And he can do a card trick for somebody, and then I can bring out an invisible deck... And they might say, oh, yeah, that was great. And they may not know the difference. How would they know? Because he made something look so simple.
Right.
And so I think as magicians that we gravitate a little bit more to each other because we appreciate each other. We understand that all this hard work went into it, and then we're hiding it. Mm-hmm. And so that's part of the reason I think magicians – have so many conventions and magic clubs and everything.
Good point. One last thing. And what were you happiest about that came together? Might have been serendipity or whatever that you were proud of, a particular show, a get of a person who arrived? Or
well, I mean, a number of things.
It could be behind the scenes. Like you said, even the fact that the program finally came together, that's what made you happy.
I mean, when your convention has already started and your final night program isn't here yet... Those are always a little nerve-wracking moments, but that's part of the nature of doing it at this particular time. There are shows. There are things that happened, like the close-up show.
Everybody's been talking about that.
I'm not sure that you know we will ever produce a better. We will certainly try, but with Pitt Hartling, Shoot Ogawa, and Aussie Wind, and the fact that Pitt did cards. And Shoot didn't touch a deck of cards and did everything non-cards. And then Aussie finishes it up with cards, but they're not your usual cards.
People find,
And the whole show was an hour and five or something. And I just thought, wow, that just fell together. I can't take a ton of credit for that. You know, I just asked him to do this. And we build the theater that they can do it in, which is a beautiful theater. And... So you love that. But I also love the other things that they're not meant for everybody. Our flashback show, some people might say, there wasn't enough magic in it, you know, or something. And that's okay. There's nothing wrong with that. Go see that. Or Stuart McLeod and Rob Zabrecki doing the history of magic, their own take on the history of magic.
That was awesome.
Just a fun kind of quirky show, no question about it. We did True Truth Lie, which was, you know, telling stories
game
and
show.
Stuff. Yeah, game show. And so these are things that we don't expect everybody to love by any means. It doesn't matter. It's a buffet.
Yeah, something for everyone.
It's hopefully something for everyone. And tonight is our stage gala. And, you know, I look down the running order, and it looks pretty good on paper. I don't want to jinx it, for gosh sake. But it looks pretty good on paper. We've been here before, though, and gotten up to the very last show.
Yes.
And things got very quiet. I could walk from one end of a 17,000-square-foot room to the other end, filled with all of my friends.
Turning their back.
And nobody making eye contact the entire time. So it's a very lonely room with 1,600 people in it. So, let's not jinx that. But, again... I think the temperature in the water, if you will, out in the magic community is that we want to be together again. And it's got a warm, fuzzy feeling. I think about it. And is that us? No, I think we just created the space to do that in.
Well, this has been a wonderful time to celebrate, and I appreciate your time sitting down and having a chat with us and talking about this and for bringing this all together, too.
My pleasure.
So for the Magic Word Podcast.
Magic Word celebrate, right?
Yes, Magic Word is to celebrate.
I have a Magic Word, finally. This is good. Yeah.
For this year. They have to think of another one for next year.
Yeah.
That was Stan Allen. Howdy.
Okay, so we just finished with a marvelous little lecture by Christopher Carter, and Chris was great. He's standing over there. You can hear me talk. Good job, Chris.
You better say Chris.
That's right. It's one of the afternoon focus sessions, and the person who is introducing him is my friend and yours, James DeMare. Hey, James.
How are you?
Fantastic, sir. So you have been kind of hanging out at the convention a little bit. You've been kind of coming and going since your local Vegasite. Yeah. They call them Vegasites or Vegasians or Vacations. What do they call people from Las Vegas?
Smart,
residents.
Smart.
Happy.
Hot. Lucky. Not if you got a pool and air conditioning.
Well, like you got a pool and air conditioning. There you go.
Yeah, I'm from Canada. This is nice.
You got to have.
Yeah.
So what have you enjoyed? What have you seen today or yesterday or what some of the shows or people?
I've been enjoying, you know, you really only go to a convention for me is to catch up on people maybe from Europe you haven't seen for a while.
Sure.
Sometimes you find that gem in a lecture, that one line or that one thing that now it triggers in your head why you were doing that, and somebody else has figured out why that happens, and now you can apply it. Like a certain, I can't remember the judge, Nate
Stanisforth.
Mm-hmm. And he's got this thing based on tension and release. I have a different angle on tension release, which is manipulation, but he had it on timing with your, you know, with your material, which was interesting. Is it Paul Wilson? Paul Wilson?
Yes, our Paul Wilson.
Oh, man. Loved his directing the audience. Mm-hmm. But I loved the way he was still keeping the people he's lecturing to engaged with the same principles while he's still trying to keep the guy he's performing to engaged. That was a good lesson.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah.
Well, there are those kinds of little nuggets. A lot of times, it's like with a lecture. Whenever you hear a lecture, it's like if you can take home something, because they kind of give you a drink of the fire hydrant. There's so much stuff that they're trying to get out, hoping that somebody will catch something.
Right.
And we do. And the same thing like with conventions. If you have one or two little things you've taken away, then it's going to have been worth your time.
Absolutely.
You know?
It's worth it.
A lot of times, it might be just a couple of words or something. There was something said yesterday. I'm trying to remember. Well, to begin with, that Master Payne had said, I'm never going to buy anything that will require me to have a second trip to the car. Which, you got
you
Doves,
go.
You got all kinds of stuff you used to carry. And even now, when and you're working over at the Mint.
Yeah, I have a trailer. What do you mean, second trip? It's one big trip, you know. And it's only because they don't have a big enough space for me to keep everything there. Otherwise, I wouldn't have to.
Yeah.
So half of it's there, half of it's. But, you know, that's my own fault. I'm doing a one-man show, but I wanted to put some big stuff in there. So I'm in a small room doing a couple of illusions and doing stuff because I want to give them bang for their buck, you know.
Well, now we're out of COVID. Are you? How many nights are you performing now?
I actually scaled back, actually, because I had moved and built a warehouse and all this stuff. So a year later, I'm doing, you know, four shows a week. All I'm doing is stressing about selling tickets. So I'm in Vegas. There's 175 shows, right?
Yeah.
It's you got to find your niche. And I'm not getting anything done at the house. Hmm. And my quality of life feels like shit. And I'm stressing. So I went, you know what? And this is peak season, right? It's just out of this and that. I went, I was only shut down COVID for 4 months. I made a ton. I made enough money for a couple. I don't care. So I said, you know what? I'm cutting my show down to once a month, and I'm getting my house done.
Oh.
So that's my priority. Because I've got the room. I can perform. I always can perform. I'm not. It's interesting. Alex Ramone was saying he's not. And that's the place where I'm at is I don't have to worry about trying to get booked somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
I have a room. All I got to do is worry about selling tickets, and I can dictate how many shows, what hours, what I say, what I do. So that's freeing. So ever since starting last month, I've been doing one show a month.
Yeah.
It's great. And all this new material I've been trying to put in for a year,
each
piece is going in once a month. A new piece is going in. I couldn't do that before, you know, because I was pulling myself between doing the show, selling tickets, and trying to get the house done.
Do you also see that as being a place where you can feature your act, where people can hopefully come in and say, hey, I want to book that guy?
I get corporate work out of it.
That's right.
I get corporate work out of it because they come over from the, what I call the
convention center,
the EDC field across the street. They come in.
Yeah.
Or you get businessmen who are waiting to go to the Golden Steer.
Great steak restaurant, by the way.
Yeah. And or I actually have had people who have come to see the show for basically seeing Martinis and Magic. That sounds good. Let's see the show. Maybe we'll book this guy. So it's nice. But, you know, still don't want to travel. We don't know enough about what's going to happen in the next variant, all this. Quite happy at home. Quite happy working on my house, jumping in the pool in between, hammering nails, having a martini.
Are you working from time to time with your dubs also and keeping in practice all the time?
Yeah. I got through them at least once a week.
Do you?
Yeah.
And how many do you have right now?
Have 14.
Okay.
Two parakeets. Two dogs.
Okay.
On my third wife, but she's the keeper.
And as far as the doves go, what do you do with their eggs? I mean, are you trying to get more? Or do you just...
Oh, no. It's not good. The more they lay eggs, the weaker they get. And actually, because I haven't done the bird act now, 2 years, they've been laying so much, even though I take them away, I have to swap those birds out now because it's in their head is laying eggs.
Yeah.
When they're working all the time, they really don't want to. They want to eat. They mess around. They don't care. They're happy. Their plumes are out. But when they have a break time, you know, they ruffle up their butt against the cage. Their feathers get broke up. They always have to grow new feathers. It's stressful for them. So then I'll swap them out, and I'll just start handling them, get them used to me. And yeah. But what's great about Vegas, it doesn't rain a lot. See, if you're in a place where it rains, they love to breed and lay when it's cold and when it's wet. That's their nature. So I don't have to deal with it too much. But, you know, when you don't do the act for 2 years...
Yeah, you know. I had a little insight about doves. I didn't know that. Well, listen, I'm glad you'll enjoy the show. I know you got to get here shortly.
I got to do my thing.
You're introducing Chris. So thank you very much, James. Always good to see you, my friend.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
So for the Magic Word Podcast, the James DeMayer, Scotty Young. As we're getting ready to go to another session, in between sessions, running into a couple of friends at Rocco and Perry. Hey there, Rocco.
Hey, man. Good to see you walking
well, Perry.
In.
Hey, Scott. It's always good seeing you at these events,
so
man.
You guys always seem like together. And that one of the things you had before was Netflix, but Magic Flicks. Is that kind of come and gone, or is that?
Yeah, we were both a part of that kind of, you know, to bring the magic community into it. Unfortunately, because of COVID and other issues, that actually is not around anymore.
Okay.
But I believe there is a gentleman trying a similar
platform
over in Europe, and I hear he's doing very well.
Okay, good. I was just curious because some people had asked, you know, what happened to Magic Flicks, and I thought I'd ask. And that how you guys been enjoying the convention then as well?
I don't know. I never heard of it. Magic Flicks?
Flux or Flick? Which
Magic
one is it?
Magic Flicks?
I think he said Magic Flux.
Let's go to the next question.
Yeah, okay. Magic Live, as far as
that's where we're at today, guys.
How
Magic
you been enjoying
Live.
The convention? What's been a highlight for you?
You know what? Just seeing everybody again, to be honest with you. You know, we've been kind of all in our homes and our little neighborhoods for the last couple of years or so.
Yep.
And getting back and doing these magic conventions and being around all the friends and everybody. And just that's what we all come. That's why we do what we do here.
You know, my highlight is watching this guy work behind a dealer's booth.
Yeah. he was working his butt off. He was ill. Yeah.
I mean, you put Al Cohen and all the masters. This guy, his training. You should see, he's a barker.
Yeah.
He get out there. He don't even need a microphone. He just all of a sudden, next thing you know, it's just like he's losing control of the money he's making.
Yeah.
Guy's money making machine, man.
You know, you got a very short time to serve so many people who want so much magic.
Okay,
so you got to get it out there because you want to make everybody happy and put magic into everybody's hands.
It's about. He's the best. Okay, so now I talked about him. Now you can
talk about you then a little bit, then Rocco. Well, so you've been as far as Vegas goes. You're going to be working in New York. Tell me about what's happening.
Yes, the new Cirque du Soleil production in collaboration with the Illusionists has a new show here in town called Mad Apple, and I'm doing the pre-warm-up show in a little theater the size of like the close-up room at the Magic Castle. We just met that guy, new owner of the Magic Castle.
Oh, yeah, Randy Pitchford.
Yeah, man, amazing.
Great
nice guy.
Guy.
Yeah. And I'm doing about 35 people, and I'm going to be doing 12 minutes of magic before the show starts for a whole year.
So it's a small room, so people come into this room is it before they go into the main theater?
Yes. There's a little bar here, VIP celebrity-type room, where they have a couple cocktails there, and then they go into this room for 35 people, and I do 12 minutes.
Mm-hmm.
The same show I did in Macau with Franz.
Yep.
And Walter Music. I got a few little gags in there, you know, make people laugh a little bit.
And the show opens when?
May 27th.
Okay,
and
great.
What's nice about the room, Scott, when you're in a small environment like that with an intimate amount of people, you do get to really feel Rocco's essence, you know.
Mm-hmm.
You've seen him many a times, and so many other people have seen him many a times.
Yeah.
When he's in an environment, they're basically designing this room right around him and his style of magic.
Mm-hmm.
So it's going to be... I'd like to say like a one-on-one, but with an intimate group of like 30 people.
Pretty much.
It's an opening experience to a huge another experience that they're going to see when they walk through the other set of doors.
Start small, end up big.
That's the guy right there. Pritchard, Randy Pritchard.
There's Randy. Hey, Randy. Very good. Good to see you.
Good to see you.
That was a good talk, by the way, yesterday. They appreciate that.
Thanks so much.
Yeah.
Cheers.
In which you gave a presentation and talking about the ownership or buying out the Magic Castle and its license and the franchise and all that. It's very interesting. Congratulations. I just wanted to say hello and also...
Yeah, man, Scott, continue success with your podcast, man.
Thank
People
you.
Are loving it. Too bad I don't see effectors in the past couple years.
Well, that's true, but I'm going to be out here in June. I'll tell you more about that in a moment, but for now, that's Perry Maynard and Rocco. Scotty out.
Yeah, man.
So we're in the bar. It shouldn't be too unusual. We're at the last day of the convention, and we'll soon be going into the main show. But beforehand, I want to talk with someone who was part of the general session and is someone who is finally completing a project that he's been working on for 6 years, Hans Bruckenheimer.
Bruckenheimer. Yeah.
Bruckenheimer. Got it. Okay. So you and I had spoken before when you first started working on this a few years ago, but you said again 6 years ago when you started on it. So give me a little update. What's been going on? And talk about the project to begin with for people who have not any idea what we're talking about.
So the project in general, I wanted to make a film about S.W. Erdnase and his book, The Expert at the Card Table, mainly surrounding the mystery that surrounds the author. Because up until today, even though it was published over 100 years ago, we still don't know who the author of The Expert at the Card Table was. So I wanted to investigate this, and as my bachelor thesis, I wrote about how to combine interview and documentary parts and documentary elements with fictional and reenactment scenes. And I used this movie in my bachelor thesis to combine those elements and to find a continuous story arc that would allow me to combine these two things. So what I ended up doing is together with my screenwriter, we came up with a concept presenting three different categories of who Erdnase might have been. So we present Milton Franklin Andrews, the serial killer that Martin Gardner found, who started this whole investigation in the first place. Then we also have a look at Richard Hatch's candidate, who is a traveling agent called E.S. Andrews. If you take the S.W. Erdnase and you read it backwards, you get E.S. Andrews. And then we also talk a little bit about Todd Carr's theory, although Todd Carr himself is not appearing in the movie, because he has a new theory. He doesn't want to talk about it yet. So his old one is about a con artist who was... doing his business in the Midwest, and he was a con artist going from town to town, introducing himself as a businessman to other businessmen, and he was saying he was sort of a debt collector. So what he would do is he would go from town to town, introduce him, collect a fee for his services, and then go and do the job and collect the fees, the debts. However, when he did collect the debts and he did receive the money, he would just skip town and take both of it. At some point, he was put in jail and interviewed. And from the interview, you might think, okay, he was in the right mindset to be cheating as well. So those are the three theories we focus on in the movie. I also talked to Chris Washuber, who has his very own theory about Edward Galloway, who might have been Erdnase as well. And I don't want to spoil the end of the movie.
No, okay.
No. So you have to see it for yourself.
And that's going to be coming out August the 6th? Or?
It's going to be out August the 6th, exactly.
And so it's going to be streaming, or you buy it, or can you view this?
It's going to be streaming first, so we're going to have an online premiere on August 6th, meaning that you can tune in. It will be at 10 a.m., I think PDT is the time zone right here in California, is that correct? Yeah. So you can watch it from Europe, but also from the U.S. And we're going to have this online premiere with a Q&A with me and other team members. And after that, it will be available online. So you can purchase it, and then you can watch it for 48 hours. And this is how it's going to be for the first couple of months. And then we are also currently talking to Amazon, Netflix, and some other distributors who might help us to get this movie out there for laymen as well. I'm also talking to Vanishing Ink and Murphy's about distributing it to the magic community.
Well, that'd be great, because I know a lot of magicians are very interested in watching this. And the clip we saw today in the general session, it looks very professional and very like a featured film kind of a thing. I mean,
I know there are a lot of people in making this, and you had also done a little bit of crowdfunding, didn't you, to begin with this?
That is true. It was relatively early in the beginning when I started doing this movie. So the Kickstarters have been waiting for a very long time, and they had to be very patient. So thank you, everybody who's listening, who has been so patient for all these years. The pandemic really screwed us over a little bit. Bad timing, but we finished it, and that's the important thing, and I hope you're going to love it. And all the Kickstarters should have received the movie by now anyways. And we're working on... everybody should have received a Vimeo link already, and everybody who has ordered something like a movie poster or a DVD, we are working on this, and they will go out in the next few weeks.
Yeah, I think I've got a deck of cards that I was sent. So will there be, you say, a link coming to us by email soon or something? Or?
The Kickstarter's already, the backers already received an email, yeah.
Okay.
But for everybody else, it won't be accessible through this platform because it's password protected and so on. And it's for the Kickstarters only, and for everybody else, it will only be available after August 6th.
Gotcha, I understand. So is this your first Magic Live and coming over here to Vegas?
Yeah, indeed. This is my first Magic Live, and it has been amazing. It's a little bit overwhelming, to be honest, here in Las Vegas, being here for the first time, but it's awesome. Yeah.
Have you seen any shows outside of this?
I was quite busy presenting the movie, to be honest. I've seen the close-up show with Ozzy Wind and so on, and I was really impressed. It was so amazing. And I did one lecture. I think it was the close-up circus?
Yes, they had a close-up clinic.
Yeah, the close-up clinic, exactly.
Right.
Yeah.
But outside of that, have you been in Las Vegas to see the shows on the Strip?
No. I haven't.
Are you sticking around a little bit longer for a few days before you go home after this is over?
I would like to, but my flight leaves tomorrow.
Oh, mine too.
Yeah, so I'm working 3 jobs currently in order to get everything done and still make a living and still get the movie done and so on. Yeah. So it's quite stressful, and I have to get home by tomorrow.
Kind of in and out.
Yeah.
So it sounds like some of your best memories over here was the close-up show, seeing Ozzy Wynn and the others then as well.
Yeah, definitely, so, for sure.
A lot of people have been saying that has been a highlight for them as well. And the dealer's room was unparalleled. That was pretty exciting, wasn't it?
The dealer's room was also great, yeah. And what was best for me, or the greatest experience for me, is that all the people I interviewed, some of them I didn't actually get to meet, because when we did shoot the interview here in the United States, I wasn't allowed entry for some reason. I did get my visa, but 9 months too late. So I had to conduct most of the interviews via video call. And now that I'm here, I was actually able to meet all those people I actually talked to 2 years ago. So this was just very rewarding.
That's pretty cool. Well, thank you very much, Hans. It's great getting caught up on you here. So
thank you for having me.
That's good. So for the Magic Words podcast, that was Hans. And say your last name again.
Hans-Joachim Brucher-Seifer.
This is Scotty Hell. Thank you. All right, so before we leave, we just finished the evening shows and did the farewell party, but I am honored to sit here and talk with somebody. I'm really not a fanboy, but because I feel like I know so many people in Magic, but I'm here with Derek Delgadio. I mean, I can talk easier with David Copperfield than I can with you. I mean, you were amazing, Derek.
Thanks
for what you do.
Thank you for saying that. I appreciate it.
So... how many shows, again, was it that you did on Broadway? 600 or something?
It was in New York, I think it was 552.
Okay.
Yeah.
And then you did some, it was in L.A. to begin with before you went out?
150 or something like that in L.A., yeah.
Yeah. I'm sure you've been asked every kind of question about the whole event and everything. And it took you how many years to work on this, to put it together?
1 year.
Just 1 year?
Yeah. Well, 1 year in a life. 1 year in a lifetime.
It took a lifetime then as well.
Yeah.
And the fact... I thought it was interesting that everybody had brought that book back every day as well, I mean, every show.
Yeah, every day it came back. It was pretty remarkable.
What was one of the most interesting stories of that book?
Of the book, inside the book?
Yeah. Whether it was a picture or a story or anything.
Someone came out of having an affair, which was really interesting.
Really?
Yeah, yeah.
They admitted to that?
Admitted to having an affair. That was pretty interesting. They had never told anyone, and so they admitted that in the show. It's pretty interesting, yeah.
I want to thank you again very much. It's good seeing you. Thanks for coming this year, too.
Yeah, thank you.
Hope you enjoyed it. You enjoy Magic Live? Was it good for you?
It was very fun. It was good to see all my friends.
Yeah.
So, and make new ones. I appreciate it.
Thank you very much, sir. I appreciate your time.
Thank you.
Okay. just finished the final evening show and also the afternoon sessions, and everything is complete. We're just now into the farewell party as we're about to be let loose into the wilds, back to our normal places of abode. And I've got with me a friend all the way up from South Africa, Craig Mitchell. Hey, Craig.
How are you doing, Scott?
Fantastic. The question is, how have you been doing the last few days? What are your thoughts?
I think everyone's had a fantastic time, especially considering we've all just come out of this horrible dark period, and it was so great to finally all come together again.
I think the fact that Stan had kind of had as a theme for this celebrate is a great idea, because we're all really anxious to get back together and celebrate our time together.
I think that was running throughout the entire convention, this idea of once again being able to get together in a room and share magic with everyone. Made it so special.
Well, I think it's appropriate that I kind of wrap up these 4 days by speaking with you, because you also often will have a lot to say about conventions, because you attend a lot of them, particularly FISM and other places. I mean, you at FISM will watch all the acts and everything and have some opinions, and so that's why I was curious to find out what your thoughts were about this. Anything in particular, what stood out was great for you?
Close-up show was definitely the highlight. I don't think we've had a close-up show that strong in a long time.
It's amazing.
And what was a particular highlight today was Ginger's floating ball in the closing show. It was a beautiful piece of magic, and every day just got better than the next. Started solidly Monday, Tuesday got even better at the close-up show, and Wednesday I think everyone had a great time.
It did.
So, big thanks to Stan and the rest of the team for all the enormous amount of hard work that goes on behind the scenes.
Well, you know that there was. For them to coordinate the logistics of everything, of 1,600 people, try to move people around so you're not bumping into each other, and there's room for everything. It wasn't like everything was packed either.
No, I think everything went very smoothly, and I can know from personal experience just how difficult it is to create the illusion of order from chaos.
Chaos, that's exactly right. Well, also closing this evening was Din Yang, is that how you pronounce it?
Din Yang, the lady from China, who once again, I think, blew everyone away as she's standing upside down, producing birds from her feet, and it's just one of those impossible acts.
Yeah. Which double dove productions with her feet, amazing.
Utterly bizarre as to how she came up with that, but got a standing ovation, and I think was just what the magicians were needing.
It is an act, I think, that could last forever, play anywhere in the world. It's beautiful. I like that she has, it looks like over the last couple of years, remodeled it a little bit. So instead of just having some sort of industrial-looking circular thing, that she has something that looks more fairy-like, like a tree or something.
Some element of fantasy and fairy. Get into that nature vibe. I mean, there are one or two questions which still remain as to whether we should be having birds on stage in 2022, but I don't think magicians worry about those little...
I don't think so. Now, was she the only bird act? I guess she wasn't.
She was the only bird act, which for magic conventions quite remarkable. Yeah. And in fact, what we were missing, we didn't have a juggler. I think this may be one of the first magic lives we didn't have a juggler.
We
now,
haven't had
I
a juggler.
About it.
And I don't remember how many large-scale illusions we've had.
Very few at this convention, which is also unusual considering we're in the heart of Illusion Land in Vegas.
Right.
But we had some nice pieces. I think MJ, Alex Ramone's dog, stole the show as well. Which is probably one of the most famous dogs now in Vegas at the moment.
At the moment. That's right. Well, maybe Piff the Magic Dragon's got a dog.
True, Piffles. So there's a bit of competition there.
Yeah, a little bit of competition. Well, it was overall, again, just an outstanding convention, I think, and Stan has always wondered if things are going to work, and I talked to him earlier today, and he said he's holding his breath. He said, I think everything's going well. He said, I don't want to jinx anything, but I think everything went great.
And considering the concerns which still circulate around COVID, and I think they only had one act which had to cancel, which was Jeff Hobson. Yeah. So all things considered, I think it was a great time.
Yeah, it was all great. A lot of fun. I know, I think you'd said you were in the earlier show this evening. I was in the later one. There were, I guess, apparently some technical difficulties.
But they treat the early show as the dress rehearsal anyway. I think the audience were having a great time.
And the second one's corrected. It was great. There's no problem for the second one.
Doing three stage shows with all the general sessions, it's so much technical coordination.
And
the technical crew work exceptionally hard to try and pull off what they do.
A lot of variety and a lot of international talent that was brought in then also. Some people I'd never heard of. Some of the artists that were the robot guys and different people who were some artists.
Charlie Capel was also a great highlight. I don't think he's been in Vegas since a good couple of years. Did both acts. And I think he blew everyone away with his FISM act, which was nice to see after such a long period of time.
Yeah. Mancha, Hector Mancha's act that had won FISM, it looked like he changed that up a little bit differently.
It did feel a bit different, and I think I was commenting to someone else. It's interesting when you see a FISM act outside of the FISM convention.
Yeah.
Sometimes it loses a bit of its sheen, just a little bit. Yeah. There's something about seeing the FISM act inside that environment, the build-up to that particular act, which often adds an extra level of energy to it.
Yeah, yeah. And the dealer's room, of course, was outstanding, the way they had everything with a lot of new stuff, and it was fun, great books, everything.
I think a lot of money was spent in the dealer's room this year, and the dealers, some of them particularly, hit the ball out the park with their stands, Vanishing Ink particular, and there was Brian South with the Magic Explorers team. They had their escape rooms. There were lots of highlights.
Right, yeah, and Tannins and everybody. It was really great. Well, good. It was a good convention all around, and so very good,
good
again.
To see you,
great
Scott.
To see you as well.
And hopefully we'll meet up again in the not-too-distant future.
Not-too-distant. We'll be seeing each other in Quebec, correct?
Indeed. FISM's always a highlight.
We'll maybe catch up and do a little recap then, too, as well.
The fun part about FISM, 6-7 days, non-stop magic. We'll see what the stamina levels are like.
See what happens. So for the Magic Word Podcast, I think that was pretty much a wrap. Thank you very much, Craig.
Cheers, Scott.
Okay. That was Craig Mitchell. And from Las Vegas... and the Orleans Hotel, Scott Young.